Your name, please?
Sir Edmund Hillary.
And your occupation and position?
Well, I'm explorer, lecturer, writer, camping consultant, and even mountaineering.
Sir Edmund, what good does it do to climb a high mountain?
Well, my viewpoint is that the results of climbing high mountain are perhaps more the effect on the individual who's doing it, the challenge that he meets in sort of facing up to the problems of nature. And the second thing is, I do feel that it can be quite a stimulation, an inspiration perhaps even to young people, that there are people who go off meeting a challenge without necessarily being any sort of financial reward for it, just because the challenge is there.
This is Viewpoint, an unrehearsed and personal interview with Sir Edmund Hillary, who will reveal to you what he holds to be the responsibilities of his position in life, produced by the Episcopal Church, and brought to you as a public service by this station. Mr. Kennedy's guest today is Sir Edmund Hillary, internationally known mountaineer, explorer, lecturer, and philanthropist. Here is the moderator of the award-winning series, Viewpoint, the Reverend Dana F. Kennedy. Mr. Kennedy.
Welcome to Viewpoint, Sir Edmund Hillary. Is there any particular kind of person that likes to climb mountains, or does it go across all kinds?
I think it goes across all stratas of society or types of people. We do find that a lot of what you might call professional people get involved in it. We found, for instance, that a great number of doctors get involved in mountaineering, often during their student days. And I think possibly this is almost a reaction from constant study and academic work. They want to get away and have a physical challenge, and many of them do this. But all sorts of people do mountaineering.
What are the results on your emotions or your mind when you're climbing?
Well, it's very stimulating, of course, even when you're maybe afraid. With each problem you overcome, and certainly when you reach the summit of a mountain, it's a tremendous stimulation to you. And you've got the satisfaction often of knowing that you're not doing any harm to anybody else, that it's only yourself and the mountain really that are the sort of the major contestants.
Is mountain climbing a single kind of operation, or does it have to be done with a group of people?
No, it's in some ways it is perhaps a sort of personal challenge between yourself and the mountain, but good climbing in general is done with a pair or even three on a rope. And I think this is one of the things I enjoy very much indeed, is being with a companion in who you have complete confidence, who's an expert mountaineer himself, and you work together as really quite a considerable team. You know, it's, in general, I would say, two good climbers roped together, understanding each other, can do a standard of climbing that's above the general standard of either of them individually. They support each other.
Is there any place where you learn mountain climbing? Is there a school of some kind?
Always, there are plenty of schools of mountain climbing, but I always sort of recommend to people, if they want to take it up, to join a club. That's the best way. There are plenty of clubs, and if a young climber gets out with older members, he's got to put up with them being a bit old and stodgy perhaps, but he can learn the basic techniques of mountaineering. And there are basic techniques which make for much safer activity in the mountains.
Does the height of the mountain have any great thing to do with who climbs
well,
it?
Well, only in effect as far as altitude affects the human body. Just recently, for instance, I was in the Antarctic, and we climbed a peak which is only 11,000 feet high, but we started right from sea level. We had to get off the sea ice, first of all up a 150-foot ice cliff, before we could even get onto the mountain. So obviously the 11,000 feet of that mountain was climbing all the way, and it was a pretty good 11,000-foot peak.
What sort of problems did you run into when you got close to the top of Mount Everest?
Well, of course, on a mountain like Everest, really one of the really big major problems is this problem of altitude. The effect of the lack of oxygen at extreme altitude reduces your efficiency enormously. You're really, in a way, rather like a sick man who's got a dose of influenza or something. You're lethargic, you can't sleep, you don't want to get up in the morning, and everything you do, although you don't often realize it, everything you do is very slow. You probably take hours to do something that might take 10 minutes low down. And this fact that you're, as I say, like a sick man, means that your efficiency is so much reduced that you've got to allow much longer to get from A to B. Instead of climbing perhaps 4,000 or 5,000 feet in a day, 1,000 feet's a long way. And if you're working for 5 hours at 28,000 feet, that's a long time.
Do you have any problem keeping determination up?
Well, you do, of course, but most of we mountaineers are a pretty stubborn lot. And I think probably if you're on a mountain like Everest, if you'd done enough to be included in a party, you'd probably prove that you did have a good deal of stubbornness and determination. There's no doubt at all that when altitude hits you, when you're lethargic, when everything is difficult for you, unless you have a basic determination behind it, well, you just say, what the heck, what am I doing here? And you don't bother pushing it too hard.
Is it any easier coming down than it is going up?
Well, yes, in a way, physically it's easier, but in some ways it's possibly even more dangerous because of the fact that you're very tired and there's a feeling of anticlimax, and you can tend to get rather careless. There have been many accidents on descents of mountains for this reason, and you really do have to sort of keep your wits about you.
Why were you involved in the Antarctic expedition recently?
Well, years ago I did spend quite a lot of time in the Antarctic. I had an expedition down in McMurdo Sound. We established a base, and I took the first vehicles overland to the South Pole in 1957-58. So it's an area in which I spent a couple of years of my life, and I was really quite anxious to go back again and carry out another trip there. So that's what I've been doing. I went back with a party. We did quite a lot of geology and quite a lot of surveying, and we climbed this mountain called Mount Herschel.
Do you do any testing of equipment?
Yes, we do indeed. Quite a lot of my equipment actually was quite interesting. We had some special pyramid-type tents which had an insulated liner in them. I got this idea actually from the Sherpas and Tibetans, who have tents which they sort of line with blankets during the winter, and they're very efficient. But of course we had a much more developed type of liner, insulated Dacron type, and it really did prove most satisfactory.
Do you learn anything on these trips that can be used by the ordinary person back home?
Well, I think they could actually. I believe, for instance, that even such a thing as an insulated liner that we have, and even the materials used in the tents that have to withstand terrific winds, that nowadays these can be used and developed for the ordinary family camper. As a matter of fact, I'm a keen family camper, and I always believe that the most rigorous test you can give any tent is to have a family of young kids in it. It really does give it some vigorous sort of treatment.
What do you think is the advantage, Sir Edmund, of camping for an ordinary family? Does it help bring them closer together or bring
them
closer to nature?
Yes, I do. I'm a firm believer in camping as a means for a family to adventure together in a very modest fashion. You know, they're not really taking any great risks or anything. But I know in my own family and with many other families I know who camp, you set off together. You have to pick your site you're going to camp. You've got to pitch your tent in a forest or somewhere. Even the lighting of the fire, the getting of your firewood, it's all an adventure, which is a little different from your ordinary way of life. And it seems to me that this is one way in which a family as a unit can sort of have an adventure together and can bring the family, I think, closer together in many ways.
Sir Edmund, in your relations with the Sherpas, have you continued to keep contact with them since your expedition there?
Oh yes, I've been back in the Sherpa country virtually every year since 1953. I've become very much involved in the establishing of small schools in the mountain villages. And last December, January, I was over there with an expedition and we built the first hospital up in the Mount Everest region. It's just a tiny hospital, almost more a clinic. We just have one doctor there and several nurses. But well, it's the first in the area, and we feel it's doing quite a lot of good work.
Do you think there's a basic conflict by nature and disposition between Easterners and Westerners?
No, I don't think so at all. I've been absolutely amazed how Sherpas, for instance, adapt to education in much the same way as, well, children in our own society would. The only difference we find is that the Sherpa children have this tremendous desire to learn. They want to go to school. And compared to my own children, who seem to want to stay away from school as much as possible, there's a much greater motivation for them to work, and they do work hard.
Do you become involved in anything besides the mountain climbing and the experimentation in New Zealand, where you live?
Well, I'm quite an enthusiast for the sort of type of activity the aid type of activity is carried on by the American Peace Corps. In New Zealand, I'm president of the local sort of Peace Corps, which we call Volunteer Service Abroad, which is very similar to the American Peace Corps, except that here the Peace Corps is more or less an organ of government and financed by government. In New Zealand, we do get government support, but it's largely financed by service organizations, churches, and so on throughout New Zealand. And we have about 120 volunteers operating throughout Southeast Asia and the Pacific, doing very similar work to the American Peace Corps. And I'm very enthusiastic about this sort of activity.
What sort of things do you think that they learn that are most important to them?
Well, I think they learn tolerance, for one thing. I think they learn, to their astonishment, that the people living in these countries are human beings. They have the same desires, same generosity perhaps, and the same weaknesses that we have ourselves. And I think this mutual understanding between countries is tremendously important.
As you look at the young people of today around the world, do you have any particular things you wish they might come to understand in relation to camping, for example?
Well, I'm not a person who believes that the young people of today are not as good as what they used to be, sort of business, as the old people tend to say. My feeling is that young people today, they have greater temptation. Society does make life in many ways easier for them, but in many ways far more complex. And in my own field, I've found that the young people today can meet the challenges just as effectively and in far more greater numbers, I might say, than in my generation 20 or 30 years ago. Now, I have a lot of time for young people. I think they do need guiding. I think we've got to put far more effort as adults into giving them opportunities for doing constructive things in constructive ways and using their energies in those sort of directions.
Sir Edmund, in all of the work that you've done, climbing the mountains, and outdoor camping and so forth, have you developed any feeling yourself about nature and religion?
Well, I would say my main feeling, basically, is that I think in my own outlook on life is to develop really a greater tolerance of other people and of other religions. I've had a great deal to do, of course, with the Sherpas, who are Buddhist by religion. I've admired the way they are tolerant of other people and other religions, and I think we can learn a lot from them. I feel that tolerance is a tremendously important thing.
Why do you do what you do, Sir Edmund?
I do it because I enjoy it more than anything else. I enjoy the challenge of exploration and mountaineering. I get a tremendous lot of satisfaction out of carrying out these aid programs, as we have been in the Himalayas. And I like people. I've enjoyed enormously my association with people in many countries throughout the world.
Thank you very much, Sir Edmund Hillary, for being with us and for giving us your viewpoint.
Thank you.
This has been Viewpoint, an unrehearsed and personal interview, produced as a public service by the Division of Radio and Television of the Episcopal Church. Today's guest was Sir Edmund Hillary, internationally known mountaineer, explorer, lecturer, and philanthropist.